we are in a pediatric chronic condition crisis right now. Almost one in two kids have at least one chronic condition in the U.S. We can't let that be the new normal. It is the new normal, but it doesn't mean it's okay. 80% of our immune system is in our gut. There's so much science pointing to the gut linking to these chronic conditions. The initial colonization is at birth during labor, and that's how the baby gets their first flush of microbes. C-section born babies have a higher risk of this progression of allergic disease called atopic March, eczema, allergy, and asthma.
There's this world we just don't see, but it's so fascinating. It controls so many things.
If you do have poor gut health and really imbalanced gut health in the first 6 months, first 1 year of life, we can, in a way, predict if the child is at higher risk for these atopic March symptoms.
My son Nova was having all these GI issues. We were looking for the answers and we could not find them in the traditional medicine community. I literally stumbled across Tiny Health. We thought we were feeding him healthy, but we didn't know that he needed more fermented foods.
A baby's microbiome is very malleable, and that's why in the early days it's so important to check and make sure that they have the right balance.
Does stress impact the microbiome just like food?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How so? Hey, it's Josh. Before we get into this episode, I have a small yet powerful favor to ask of you. The community has been growing by thousands lately, and the bigger the tribe, the bigger names of world-class guests we can have on this podcast that I can bring to you from my heart, from my curiosity, so you can have more wellness and wisdom in your life. Would you please be so kind as to hit the subscribe button wherever you're watching or listening to this podcast? It'll allow us to rise naturally in the algorithms based on your 2 second act of generosity by you just tapping that little subscribe button wherever you're viewing or hearing this episode. Thank you so much. It means the world to me and our entire team here at Wellness and Wisdom. Now enjoy the podcast. Okay, Cheryl, we're just going to go whenever we go. I am so fascinated with this world that we cannot see that you are always in touch with, the microbes on our skin, in our body, in our mouth, in all of our doorways. I mean, it's such an incredible world. You guys are scratching the surface at Tiny Health. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah. This world, it's so fascinating. I think we've tried for a long time to even understand the world that we cannot see when it comes to microbes. But when you look at birth and what's going on in birth and the vaginal canal and how the baby gets, you know, assimilated from the mother's womb, there's so much incredible intelligence that's happening that we just cannot see, but yet you definitely notice, and I notice, that's what led me to you. I'm gonna share in a minute how I found you in Tiny Health. It's such a almost magical world. Do you find this world to be magical? This world we cannot see of microbes and gut health and everything that's going on in our body and on our skin? It's freaking fascinating.
And some people think it's spiritual too. Because, you know, it's 38 trillion microbes living in or on you, right? And there's different pieces of microbiome, different spaces, right? There's the oral microbiome and there's the skin microbiome, which covers your entire, you know, your largest organ, right? And then the gut microbiome, there's the vaginal microbiome. Now, the gut microbiome, the gut health, is what you hear most often because it's the most well-studied part. And, you know, the oral microbiome, as you may know, is certainly really important. The amount of microbes you can find in your gut is 10x the number in your oral microbiome, right? And because there's so much more microbes in your gut that can even be oxygen intolerant, meaning there are some microbes that when exposed to oxygen, they die, you know? And those are actually beneficial microbes. A lot of microbes that are actually good for your immune system are not oxygen tolerant. So they live in your gut and they provide this function to train your immune system at birth. And as you grow older, you're being exposed to all these worldly microbes from the environment, nature, pets, food, and things like that. And your body adapts to it, right? And it gets more diverse. So we can, we can dive
into. There's so much there. Literally Tiny Health. I love the name. Do you remember where you were when you chose that name? Were you like in a car in the Bay Area? Were you at Fisherman's Wharf? Like, when did you say, oh, that's it? That's going to be my mission. That's going to be my dharma.
Yes, I have to credit my husband. He came up with the name Tiny Health. tiny means, you know, not just the tiny babies, because we started with a baby gut health test, mom and babies in the first 1,000 days. But tiny also means the invisible tiny microbes in our guts, right? So it's, there's dual meaning to it. And initially too, like our company name actually is Seeding Inc. So it's like seeding. And the reason why I chose seeding for the incorporated name is because I learned, you know, that you get your microbes from your mom at birth through the vaginal canal. So the fetus in the mom's womb is sterile. There was some controversy around this, some debate around, oh, does the fetus have a microbiome? And now the science is actually proven that they don't. There may be some transfer, but the initial colonization is at birth during labor, and the baby acquires mom's vaginal microbes first, and some fecal fluid. You know, there's a reason why the vagina is next to the anus for a very strategic reason for birth. Some fecal fluid, which is actually healthy, inoculates baby when the baby comes out and swallows the, you know, all the fluids during that process. Wow. And that's how the baby gets their first flush of microbes, right? And then magically, to continuing on that process, the breastfeeding action, the mom is continuing to transfer her gut microbes through breast milk to her infant. Mm. So because of that, the first, you know, initial colonization really does sort of map the trajectory of how the infant's microbiome develops, right? And it's so crucial for immune training. The first 1,000 days is really that critical time point. If you, you know, talk about like that immune system being related to the gut microbiome, now we know that 80% of our immune system is in our gut. And if we're acquiring that at birth, what seeds the baby's gut initially does matter. And, you know, and also like what I learned through my own journey, because I actually had a C-section of my daughter when she was born. So I was like, oh, she's not going through the vaginal canal.
Yeah.
May she be missing certain microbes that are important for immune training? And I learned, yes, the answer is that yes, she was missing some certain microbes. Mm. And, you know, the other thing I learned was that the microbiome of the baby, because they're only acquiring that at birth, it's really simple. It's very low in diversity. So if you think of like no microbes in the fetus, and when they're born, they have, there's maybe like 10 seats in a theater. Like if you imagine the baby's gut, like a theater room, and there's only 10 seats, then what gets filled matters. So is it, you know, 10 good guys in there, or is it 10 bad guys in there? Ideally, you actually want 9 good guys and 1 bad guy. So the bad guy is represented by E. coli, something that you may have heard of, an unfriendly microbe, right? And the 9 guys should be bifidobacteria, which is very protective, and it trains the baby's immune system. These 10 microbes are supposed to, you know, be adapted to digest breast milk, mom's breast milk. So then we go into the science of breast milk. Like mom's breast milk is 1/3 human milk oligosaccharides, or for short, HMOs. And it just goes through the baby's gut without being digested. So it's not for a baby, it's actually for the microbes in the baby's gut. So if the baby doesn't have bifidobacteria, then these HMOs aren't being digested. And then what takes hold is more of these E. coli. So oftentimes if we see a baby's gut having 9 out of 10 E. coli, we know it's imbalance. And then as the baby grows older, and usually around 6 months, you start solids, right? You have 2 kids, right? Mm-hmm, yeah. So you've been through that whole process. Between 6 to 8 months is when they start. Then the seeds expand from 10 to 20 to 50. Now we, if you and I did our adult gut tests using a tiny health test, we will see probably 300 to 500 species, more strains. Like we now have strain resolution too. So an adult gut is pretty complex at this point. And a baby is very simple. A baby has 10x less microbes. So from a scientific perspective, it's much easier to categorize universally healthy gut in an infant versus, you know, in adults, it's a little harder to tell. There's no really such thing as a one universal healthy microbiome.
Wow. Okay. There's so much there to unpack. So what you said is so profound to me because I have seen it firsthand. How I found you and how I found Tiny Health was my son Nova was having all these GI issues. And look, it's no knock against Western medicine. If I break my leg, I need them. Mm-hmm. I need to get my leg fixed. But when it comes to just this allopathic model, it makes me exhale. It just makes me, and I think most parents, so have so much trepidation about going there, because once you enter the system, it's really hard to exit the system. Mm-hmm. And that system is a for-profit system. It's not a for-health system. But I digress. I mean, really what I'm saying is, like, we were looking for the answers and we could not find them in the traditional medicine community. And so we went to functional docs and different people in Austin. And then I literally stumbled across Tiny Health. Mm-hmm. And Lauren, who's my executive assistant, shout out to Lauren, she was like, you need to look at this. We gave Nova the test. I eventually jumped on a call with you. We became a partner. And, you know, history's in the pages. I just feel like this is so important because so many people just are in this traditional mindset. And I don't know, Cheryl, if it's just training or conditioning. If your baby's sick, you take them to the doctor, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. It's just this almost like
it's
heuristic.
Sick care, right? It's not really healthcare.
Yes. And so that's how we found you. So first and foremost, before we dive into the many layers here, thank you for what you do, because we were able to actually use different supplementation based on the test results. And we just, there's no way we would have gone that deep. And it probably would have been 20 or 30 times more expensive if we went there as parents. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for doing this.
I'm so grateful you found this.
Yes, me too. So now on that place of most parents' dilemma, mm-hmm. share with us the breath of fresh air that you're bringing. That's really what it feels like. It's a breath of fresh air when it comes to parents. And I know there's many different tests with Tiny Health. It's not just for babies. It's not just for kids. There's a lot more. But share with us the breath of fresh air that you're actually bringing to parents so that they can become their own citizen scientists, right? Mm-hmm. You're not practicing medicine. This isn't medical advice.
No, it's wellness.
But this is about living your life well. But mm-hmm. take us from that place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really just comes back to why I started the company, right? My own personal story and my personal struggle. So like you, I was, my kids were experiencing symptoms. But even before that, like I mentioned earlier, my first daughter, she was born about 6 years ago and she was breached. So and the medical system was like, oh, she's breached.
For people that don't know, that's where the feet come out first.
Yeah, butt.
Right.
Usually butt first.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
They're upside down. They're supposed to be head down.
Yes.
And that's the safest way to birth baby. And it used to be a variation of normal. People used to know how to birth breech babies, but it's a lost art. I don't want to get into the politics of it. There's a whole political, you know, kind of reason why breech babies are now automatically pushed to a C-section. So I had to really research all that. And that's when I learned actually to advocate for myself that the system is just kind of like on a certain path because of certain maybe political happening or one study that was really flawed that kind of like made breech births now taboo, you know, when it's not supposed to be. So anyway, without kind of like going into the detail, I had to learn that, okay, well, breech births are normal. So I need to not just like listen and nod to what my OBGYN said. They basically said, I just needed a C-section. So then I went through this whole journey of researching, well, is it so bad to have a C-section? And what does it mean for my baby's lifelong health? I've always been a gut health person, like, you know, understanding how fiber is really important and certain processed food is really harmful for your gut. But I never really understood, as I mentioned to you earlier, where the microbiome came from, right? Mm. Then when I dug into the research on how the baby acquires the microbes, I'm like, oh my gosh, like vaginal birth, there is a distinct difference between a baby born via vaginal birth versus C-section. There's a distinct difference in their guts. And then I was like, what does that mean? And then I realized that C-section born babies, or in the literature at least, have a higher risk of this progression of allergic disease called atopic March. So that usually starts with eczema around 3 to 6 months, usually around 6 months when they start solids. And that progresses to food allergies and then asthma by age 6 and then hay fever as an adult. So this trilogy or, you know, basically trilogy of childhood conditions that then result in hay fever in an adult. But then if you double click into it, I spend months researching this, why these allergic reactions, right, to food, from dietary allergens, skin allergens, respiratory allergens. It's a sign that the baby's immune system wasn't trained correctly. Mm. And I'm like, what is training this baby's immune system? So when a baby is born, they don't have an immune system, right? They're fragile, they're learning, and these microbes in their gut train their immune system. So that's why coming back to like the sort of like, you know, if you imagine the baby's gut as being a theater room with 10 seats, who gets seated in those initial 10 seats really do matter. And as the baby grows and the theater expands, what inhabits really do guide their immune training. So eczema, allergies, asthma, they're all a sign that their immune system at birth wasn't trained correctly. And I was like, okay, well, if my C-section born baby is going to have a higher risk for all these things, what can I do to mitigate it, right? I did try for vaginal birth, breech birth, but, you know, I labored for 16 hours and it didn't happen. But I was at peace with it because I knew I tried. I also found out about vaginal seeding. So meaning, you know, there is a couple studies at the time done where after the C-section operation, you can actually, you basically place a gauze in the vagina for an hour before operation. Because even if it's an emergency C-section, there's a lot of pre-ops planning and things like that. There's actually time. It's not so hectic and rushed as people think, right? There is an opportunity to include in your birth plan, plan B, if you do need a C-section, to add a vaginal seeding procedure. And you, of course, have to discuss it with your OBGYN, and some OBs just don't want to do it. But what it is you...
I would think you could just demand it.
You have the right to.
I think women,
you have the right
women to. Don't understand a lot of times. They have way more power than the hospital they tells do. Them they do.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. So my midwife did it because my OBGYN didn't actually, you know, want to do it. Basically, what it is the gauze is filled with your vaginal fluids, you know, for an hour. And when the baby's born through C-section, you immediately, within the first 2 minutes, swab it around their mouth, their face, to mimic the vaginal birthing environment,
so
right?
Yeah.
So there has been way more papers published now, and babies who were swabbed with the vaginal seeding do look more like vaginally born babies than C-section born babies. So this was early on, though. I read that paper and I'm like, maybe I should do that. So I ended up doing that. Again, I mean, there's a little bit of controversy around that just because there's not enough like clinical evidence yet on that. But to me, it's like, if the baby's passing through the vaginal canal anyway.
It's so interesting because you're in this world of science. And so, you know, on your board, in your literature, in your studies, there's a lot of medical academia, as there should be for the people that are more left-brained and analytical and want the science. Mm-hmm. And then there's just the big deep breath we can all take and say, well, how does God, creator, nature want the babies to come into the world anyways? Mm-hmm. Through the mother's canal. Now, for some reason that can't happen, then I think mimicking that as much as possible is so good for the baby in ways that we cannot see. You know, I started this podcast with a quote by saying, there's this world we just don't see, but it's so fascinating. It controls so many things. Mm-hmm. Look at the mitochondria in our system. Look at all the good bacteria, the bad bacteria, which is really, like you said, they need each other in the theater. Mm-hmm. If there's one bad person, if there's 10 great people, and there's no, quote, bad bacteria, there's not going to be enough diversity to really drive the movie, to actually make it happen. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is that we need this dysbiosis, healthy dysbiosis, if that's even a term. We need that. Mm-hmm. But yet we live in a world that is just so hygienic and everything's so perfectly clean all the time. Mm-hmm. And even in hospitals, you know, we spent 10 days in the NICU. It was absolutely heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. Absolutely the most stressful time of my whole life. Mm-hmm. I would not wish that on anyone, y'all. So definitely pay attention to the layers that we're going to expose today with Cheryl. Cheryl, when you did that seeding, which by the way, I love how that's tied into the
company name. Yeah.
That was the initial question I
asked
you.
Yes, we digressed.
It's a good digression. So when you did that seeding and when you started to watch the baby come into their lives, you know, what was that like for all the parents or even the people that are, you know, going to have the misfortune of going down the route of like being in a NICU, like we had to go through, like there's ways in which I think you can help right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Just by your own experience.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why, like, as I was going through this journey, coming back to the story, I was like, oh, there are things you can do to course correct early on. So if my baby isn't passing through the vaginal canal, how can I get her, my vaginal microbes seeded first? Now that I'm more educated about the vaginal microbiome, there is a community type that you want. And if you don't have that, you know, healthy vaginal microbiome, like lactobacillus dominated microbiome, you probably shouldn't swap your baby with it. So there are contraindications in a perfect world. If you do have, you know, if your gut and vaginal microbiome is healthy, you are passing on the healthy pieces to your baby, but it could also be in a very bad shape, right? And that's the, like, you know, that's what you want to know. And our test empowers you to learn about that.
So the mother would want to go through a series of real tests to see how her microbiome is, even before the birth, regardless of if it's a VBAC or a cesarean or a natural birth, she'd want to test herself first.
Yes, yes.
To make sure she's passing that on, seeding it to the baby.
Yeah, it's a much longer conversation. So then basically I uncovered a lot of literature showing that you can intervene. There are many things you can do to ensure that your baby has the best start in life, the best kind of chance of healthy microbiome. So seeding could be one of them if your vaginal and gut microbiome looks good as a mom. And again, I'll come back to that. And then breastfeeding, because I'm learning that you can continue to transfer your microbes to your baby through breast milk. That's also very restoring for a C-section born. There is an impact of formula. It kind of enriches baby's gut to a little bit too early in a way before 6 months. But as long as there's some breast milk involved, it keeps the maturation low, which is what you want in the first 6 months. You want to keep diversity low in the first 6 months before baby's exposed to solids. And, you know, there are certain, like, you know, if the mom was missing certain microbes in her gut, then she is actually not passing that on to baby. So then baby may need extra supplementation with certain probiotic strains. And mom can also take it and then pass it on through her breast milk if you don't want to give it directly to infant. Mm. So this comes back to, like, when I was then pregnant with my second son, I had a VBAC with him, so vaginal birth after a cesarean section. So it's also another myth that you have to have once a C-section, always a C-section. It's just not true.
Sure.
And then when I tested my gut during pregnancy and my vaginal microbiome during pregnancy, I actually did not have good gut health. I was missing bifidobacteria, which is what I was supposed to transfer to my baby in vaginal birth. And my vaginal microbiome was not in good shape. So I had to course correct. And because I had just, you know, I was really just coming up with Tiny Health's concept at the time. In fact, I incorporated a week after my son was born, my second child. I knew that I didn't have the microbes to pass on to him even through a vaginal birth. So I had to supplement him with a probiotic for a few weeks. And then when I finally tested him, he had, like, the right, you know, microbial composition and the right balance. We have now come a long way. We are about almost 2 years old since we launched in April 2022, and we've served over 25,000 families. So we have a lot of moms who vaginally birth their babies and breastfed their babies, and their guts, their baby's guts don't look very good. Where we do have the mom's sample, the mom was also missing the BIFs, the bifidobacteria. So it is important. I mean, there is a strong connection. I know it's a lot of weight on the mom, but, you know, and dads certainly can influence the baby's microbiome too. But that's kind of why we now, you know, sort of like, if you are planning to have more babies in the future, check in the mom's microbiome now, like in the gut and the vaginal microbiome, because for adults, it takes a lot longer to course correct. For me, when I learned that I had zero BIFs, zero archimensia, and low lactobacillus, it took me 6 to 9 months of regimented dietary and like changes, supplements, and lifestyle changes to really get to a point where I was zero BIFs. I now have about 8% BIFs, even without probiotic supplementation. So it's possible. It just takes a lot more effort. Whereas in a baby, you can really turn it around in a few weeks, in 3 to 4 weeks. A baby's microbiome is very malleable. And that's why in the early days, it's so important to check and make sure that they have the right balance.
Okay, so when it comes to dads, and this is a selfish question for me, and also I just think people forget that the father is actually the one that plants the seed. Of course, it grows inside of the woman, so special, so sacred. But what are the ways in which fathers dictate the health of a baby's microbiome?
Yes. You know, it's funny because I got my husband to test too, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. I knew I was missing archimensia, but my husband has archimensia. And archimensia, have you heard of that bacteria?
Sure, of course.
It's really crucial for metabolic health. It's something that replenishes the mucus in the gut lining. So if you heard of terms like leaky gut, it's because your gut lining is weak and bad bacteria can pass into your blood system.
Yeah.
So archimensia is a crucial microbe that, you know, helps protect your gut lining, but also really, really good for metabolic health. So, and studies have now shown that missing archimensia in older kids is connected to eczema and some allergies too. So it's really crucial. And I didn't have any. But when I tested my husband, he had some. So when our baby was, eating solids, I would actually get my husband to pre-chew meat and things like that, and then give it to my son so that he can hopefully pass on some microbes to. I'm not sure if that's actually the route of transfer.
Yeah.
But finally, when I measured my son's microbiome around, 18 months old, he had some Archimensia, and my daughter has some Archimensia too.
Just from doing the baby bird thing where he would chew it and then feed. I said, that's what birds do in nature. They chew it and yes. They give it to their young chicks.
I know
so
it
he
sounds
was doing
gross,
it.
But it's actually
it doesn't sound gross.
People
I
used
see
to
Carrie
do that.
Michelle doing that all the time with our kids.
Yeah, people used
she
to
just
do
intuitively
that.
Does it.
Yeah, and there's a reason too, because you want to pre-digest the meat with your saliva. Saliva has enzymes, right?
Yeah.
For the baby. So you're actually helping the baby digest that meat before giving it to your child.
That's so good. Yeah,
a
because
lot of benefits.
People forget. It's so easy to forget if you haven't taken like the basic education, which mine was like 25 years ago or something. But I remember protease, amylase, and lipase. Yeah. I mean, they're in there. Mm-hmm. That pre-digest the food material and then it goes into the microbiome. So yeah, if we're giving the baby that, so mm-hmm. as a dad, should I be baby birding my son?
I mean,
should I be baby birding my kids?
Maybe. I had kissing, close contact, you uh-huh. can pass it on too. And what we now know about Archimensis is that, it's transmitted from mom to child too,
yeah.
but you don't find it in the first year of life. I always get this question. How do you Tanya Hall, like, how do you know these answers?
Yeah.
When we started, look, I'm not a microbiologist, right? I'm not a doctor. I don't have the right credentials, but before I started a company, I did my homework. Because I was doing all this research, I actually reached out to the authors of these papers at Johns Hopkins, Dr. Noel Mueller. He wrote this review paper called Mom Matters. And
we're going to put that on the screen right now so everybody can see it. It's called Mom Matters.
Yes,
Mom Matters. Okay, it's on the screen right now if you're watching on YouTube or Spotify.
It was so influential to me. It had all the seeding stuff in there and the breast milk and all that. And he's now an advisor. He's a scientific advisor. I was introduced to Dr. Ruben Mars from Mayo Clinic. And he actually left Mayo Clinic for 6 months to come and build Tiny Health with me in the initial reference ranges. So all these experts that I was, reading about their work, they became my mentors, and I was telling them my idea of Tiny Health and how do I learn about the sequencing methods. So they ended up pointing me to a PhD level course online that I then kind of finished and, learned all about it. The way we built our initial ranges was through publicly available papers. So there's about three main papers and about 3,000 baby samples, so mom and baby in the first year. So we built our reference range using that. And there are babies from all over the world, from the US, from Europe, from Asia. So it's pretty representative.
I bet the babies in Europe had much better diversity than North America.
I don't remember specifics, but it's pretty similar. Again, especially in the first 6 months of life, the only job of the baby's gut is to digest breast milk and or formula, right? So it's pretty consistent around the world.
Uh-huh.
I think this whole question about a universal healthy microbiome, when you say that to an adult, obviously our adult microbiome is influenced by culture, the weather, where you were born,
stress, everything,
stress, but diet too, right? So like if you ate Indian cuisine all your life, your microbiome is going to look very different from if you just ate like the American diet, right?
Sure.
So but in a way we can categorize a healthy microbiome in a baby so well because diversity is low. Remember the 10 seats versus 500 seats. And then its only function is digesting milk in the first 6 months. So we think that by mapping the infant microbiome first and defining what's healthy there, and as the infant grows older with more foods and you get into daycare and get more exposure to pets and animals and other friends, we can see like the features of a healthy microbiome from baby to toddlerhood to childhood to then adulthood, right?
Yeah.
So we're not seeking for one healthy microbiome because there's no such thing as a one-size-fits-all.
Mm.
But we can see, do you have enough beneficial bacteria that's protective? Like bifidobacteria, Archimensia that we talked about for metabolic health. Do you have too much disruptive bacteria like E. coli, Klebsiella, a cousin of it, inflammation markers? Do you have the bacteria that helps protect your gut lining? Do you have, you know, short chain fatty acids, that's important for your gut lining as well, fiber digestion and things like that. So we look into a lot of these features and we don't have a score. I know our users are asking for a score, like tell me if I'm a 92 or a 75 or whatever. We've tried really hard not to give you one score because at the end of the day, you know, it's different like categories of the gut, right, that we show you. So that's what we show in the reports.
As long as you can see a delta of it increasing and increasing to just more diversity, healthy outcome, then I think this quest for perfection is actually really egoic in the sense like, oh, my kids have to be at this level and I have to be at this level. It's like our life changes so much. And like you said, wherever we live, if you're around farm animals, that is so fascinating to me, by the way. So we just purchase some land in Dripping Springs. And I know that you have some land too. Do you have chickens on your land?
No, but we're about to get a chicken coop.
This is really fascinating to me. This is something that not a lot of people know at all. And I actually heard this, it resounded in some of the literature that you sent me when we had your call, the farm animals. So farm animals kept in a very sanitary way, right? And not just like laying in their own stuff and really funky.
But they should be roaming around and eating worms.
But roaming around. So what is that? That to me is so fascinating. Why does contact with farm animals or just animals in general help a child's microbiome? What's the science on that?
Yeah, diversity, really. You know, the more diverse our microbiome is, the more robust it is against other unfriendly microbes, right? But it all comes back to like a healthy gut should have the right balance of beneficial and unfriendly bacteria. It has to be protective. So if you are missing those beneficial protective bacteria, if you are exposed to these unfriendly microbes for more diversity, then you may get allergic reactions to it. So it's almost like, you know, if you look at generations ago, we used to live on a farm and that was just a thing we were born with, right?
Yeah.
And we had that diversity. And then now it's like we used to live like maybe 90% of our time outdoors. Now it's 90% indoors. We're indoors right now.
Seriously.
No sunlight.
We're just breathing from the HVAC.
Yeah,
whatever's HVAC.
Exactly. There's no circulation in the air and all that, right? So I think also kind of we need to be aware then if we live in this environment and if we suddenly go out and get exposed, we might get allergies and things like that. But it has to be a lifestyle, right? It has to be intentional. It can't just be like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, we do tell our parents like, you know, like try to get a pet or go to a petting zoo. And it was funny because there was one mom who took her, she's like, oh, I haven't exposed them to any pets or animals, took them to the zoo and her son immediately had a reaction. And we were like, oh no, like, you know, we were worried, like they're going to sue us. But the mom was so grateful. And she was like, oh my gosh, that's how little I've exposed my kids to animals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you know, what I'm saying is like this whole farm thing, right? We have young kids, right? My kids are like 4 and 6 and yours are even younger, right? Like, I think it is important to be intentional to expose them at an earlier age and not wait till it's too late, right? Because you want this diversity early on so that their guts are more robust and not wait until we've like just living in a cocoon for like, I don't know, like 20 years and then all of a sudden.
You know what it feels like your company is an answer to? And so many other companies in their unique lanes, I guess, in our world of wellness or well-being, it's like the more we've divorced ourselves from nature and from just living in a natural way. You talked about us growing up on farms in the past and eating natural foods, like butter was not demonized yet. It hadn't gone through the Time magazine cover. There was a lot of things that we just did naturally because we intuitively knew from a nature-based living standpoint, including, by the way, nature-based education for children and how that's changed, keeping kids indoors for 8 hours a day at school. We've become so divorced from a natural way of living that your company is an answer to give people a window or an insight, almost like an external locus of control, so that they can bring themselves actually closer to nature. In other words, it is an answer to modernity's sword. It's the good side of the sword, because modernity really pulls us away from nature in so many ways. And I think it's really beautiful. Have you thought about this concept, really, what you're doing? It's a window to bring people back to the natural rhythms and harmony and microbiome, the world we cannot see in nature. Have you thought about that?
I mean, sometimes we get parents like, oh, you're giving us such generic advice on going out to nature more and, you know,
but
exposure. Because we can actually tell if you're from your report, your gut, you know, report, if your diversity is there, right? So when we do tell you, you need to get out more, it's really there to be a reminder that you can do more.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I mentioned like we built our initial reference range from 3,000 babies now we have a whole lot more. It's just, you know, we have much more data now. Like people tell us what, you know, their symptoms are, their conditions. So we do know which kind of microbiome profile or composition maps to a healthy individual without symptoms, and then which profile maps to an eczema case or an allergy case, right? Or even like there's a connection between sleep and the microbiome. So if your child is not a good sleeper, check their microbiome. They're probably missing some microbe there.
Yeah. I remember we had Dr. Ruscio on the show, which I'd love to connect you to. You two are going to talk for days because this is his whole world. So shout out to Michael Ruscio. Dr. Michael Ruscio has been on the show 4 times.
Wow.
And I think what's most fascinating to me about how I started our conversation together is just this world that we cannot see. What is it that people refuse to see about your world? In other words, what's some of the wisdom and what's some of the science-backed wisdom that you can stand upon that may not be popular in the Western medical mindset?
Well, you know, I learned that it takes an average 10 to 15 years for academic research, groundbreaking academic research, to reach medical practice. There may be good reasons for that. You need more clinical trials and things like that. But it's a long time, right? And for me, I needed to take action sooner for my own family. So for me, it's like the critical time point, as I learned, was in the first 1,000 days. And when I say that, I really mean the first year of life. One paper I read in relation to the C-section, my research in C-section born babies, is that there's something called a C-section signature that a child could be born with, meaning there's more antibiotic-resistant bugs that inhabit the baby's gut initially. Mm. And there's a paper showing that by 1 year of age, most C-section-born babies, their C-section signature would have been removed by 1 year of age. There's a subset of people who don't. The C-section signature is still high. For babies whose C-section signature is gone, their asthma risk is reduced by 3x.
Wow. Let that land. That's huge.
Yeah.
3x less asthma.
Yes.
Just from correcting microbiome in the gut.
Correct, in the early life. So the first year really is that critical time point.
Yeah.
And so for me, knowing that fact, I'm like, I can't wait for academic research for 10 years for medical practice to pick it up, right?
Yeah, it's like turning a battleship. It takes forever.
Yeah. So that said, you know, it's kind of like we're, as an innovative company, we're bypassing that a lot. But with, you know, hopefully the guidance of your practitioner, we are, again, not medical advice. We want to be careful about that.
Sure.
Everything we recommend is evidence-based. So there are papers you can kind of click into, see PubMed articles linking to it. And ultimately, it's your call, your decision. But what we're trying to do is really surfacing all these evidence, right, that you may not know. And then we also have a really rigorous way of rating these papers internally. Are they strong papers? Is the sample size large enough? Some papers are weak in power, and we don't factor those in. And we have ratings, right? If you click into a metric and see, you know, one of the action cards, we will tell you if this is like strong evidence or emerging evidence or weak or things like that.
Well, y'all were making enough of a wave that you got attracted to Shark Tank. I saw the preview. You were in the preview, but then I didn't see you on Shark Tank. What happened?
Yes, you're right. When last summer, we were invited to tape, we were casted.
So they saw the value in what you're doing with the white space you're filling.
Yes, they were very excited about Tiny House. So I then went on to pitch last summer, and I'm not sure how much I'm supposed to say, but we did get a really good taping in June last year, and we had a couple sharks, really good sharks, bite and had a deal on the taping. And then I was raising money. I was raising my Series A. And then so soon after the taping, we got a few term sheets from VCs for our Series A. And the terms were very different. They were much better than what I offered the sharks in a tank. And so I had to focus on my Series A. It was kind of like a really tough decision, but ultimately that led to me closing my A. Just like a couple of months ago, I closed my 8.5 million Series A. It was sort of that versus 9 million viewers potentially, and, you know, being on public television and having all that exposure was, you know, what I had hoped for. But ultimately, I had to make a call to prioritize my Series A and raise that money for my company. So it was really tough because our whole team, there was a lot of work that went into it, the pitching, the set preparation, the investment to it. And it was really hard to hear when they didn't want to air us because the deal didn't go through.
Yeah, that's so hard. It's interesting. Before we even hit the record button, I was asking you, like, you know, what's top of heart for you? And you were like, wow, this week actually has been a really challenging week. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so genuine. We did some breath work before we started the podcast. You know, we're humans. Like, I think it's so easy for people to hear you on a podcast. You're articulate, you're successful, you're the founder of a company, everything's all put together. You're a mom, you're a human, you're a soul. Mm-hmm. You deal with stress just like all of us. Mm-hmm. And the impact of stress is really unique on the biome, because I can specifically remember when I was a personal trainer, I would train people and I would give them these perfect, what I thought were perfect plans. And they wouldn't lose any weight. And then I really get to talk to them in the sessions and they hated their husband or wife. Mm. They hated their life. I was in La Jolla, California. They would drive a Bentley to the personal training session, but they were absolutely miserable. And even back then, before I had any knowledge of the microbiome, before I had done podcast number one of 700, mm-hmm. I just had this intuitive sense. I was like, I wonder if it's something with their gut. Because I noticed specifically with the ladies that I'd be training in the past, they had a protrusion. They had a constant bloat in mm-hmm. their gut. Mm-hmm. Does stress impact the microbiome just like food?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How so?
Yeah, I mean, there's the gut-brain axis connection, right? That said, it's largely bidirectional is what we know. Like, stress affects the gut, and your gut health also affects your mood and your stress, right? So if you have poor gut health, it actually affects your cognitive abilities, right? And especially when you go back to early life, there's also connection between what the mom's diet is during pregnancy, her butyrate function, her short-chain fatty acids. There's two papers showing that mom's butyrate function during pregnancy affects the child's external behavior by 2 years of age. So how, you know, extroverted or introverted they are, and how are they able to express their feelings? So there is evidence that there's a connection. That said, you know, the research there is emerging, and we don't claim to always say we know everything. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing about building this company that I want to really be, you know, in this industry, there's a lot of snake oil of people making claims when they shouldn't. And I want to make sure that our company is always grounded on scientific foundation. And, you know, the research around the gut-brain axis is really exciting and emerging, right? But we don't know if it's sort of like, is it a poor gut affecting mental health, or is it mental health affecting gut? There is a, like, you know, bidirectional effect there.
Well, is it chicken or egg?
Yes, you know, exactly.
Which one is it really? And yeah. And maybe instead of deciphering which one it is, just help support them both.
Yeah. However, you know, in infancy though, the more directional connection we can make from the gut is gut and sleep in infancy, gut and eczema, and allergies to a lesser extent. More research is needed there, and gut to asthma. It's a clearer direction. If you do have poor gut health and really imbalanced gut health in the first 6 months, first 1 year of life, we can, in a way, predict if the child is at higher risk for these atopic March symptoms.
When you say atopic, what do you mean by that?
So the allergic progression of allergic diseases I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. The triad, the eczema, allergy, and asthma.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That is atopic. I love podcasting, because I get to talk to really smart people about terms that I don't know.
Sometimes they call it allergic march. Sometimes they call it atopic march. And it's a march because once you get one, you're at higher risk for the other ones, right? And I do think that we are in a pediatric chronic condition crisis right now. Almost one in two kids have at least one chronic condition in the U.S. And that is crazy, right? We can't let that be the new normal. It is the new normal, but it doesn't mean it's okay.
And it doesn't mean it's normal either.
We can't normalize it, right? I mean, that has risen in the past few decades. So, and if there's so much science pointing to the gut linking to these chronic conditions.
So if we know this, and I say we, like the collective we, then what is the pause, or what is the holding back for there to be really beautiful science in schools feeding kids healthy food? Like, what is the disconnect? Is it just economics? Is it purely economic is my question. Mm-hmm. If we know that this pediatric chronic conditions crisis is happening, then why, with all the science that you have and that even Western medicine has, isn't there just a relaxation of, okay, why don't we take money from here and put it towards actually feeding kids healthy food? Why is that not happening? Is it purely economic?
It's probably systemic and economic too, incentives, where incentives are like, I mean, our school doesn't teach or, you know, like our doctors aren't taught nutrition necessarily, right? It's maybe a small part of their medical degree.
I think it's less than a day.
Yeah, probably. It's, they're not taught prevention, right? They're not taught about the microbiome. So you have to seek out the functionally trained integrative doctors who then have to self-teach. And there are now institutions teaching that, right? But I mean, if you look at, you know, like even the healthcare system that we talked about earlier, sick care, right? Their doctors are great. And I don't want to dismiss them because they are there for a good reason. But we do need operations or we have cancer.
For these doctors, they get like 4 to 7 minutes with a patient.
Yes.
I mean, they have such a hard job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, like microbiome science is new, right? It really is. The technology has also changed. And it's important to know that. Like we went from culturing bacteria to then using PCR-based methods, which means you have to like probe one microbe at a time. So a lot of conventional stool tests out in the market are PCR-driven, but it gives you a very limited view of your gut. And then we went from PCR to 16S, whole genome sequencing, where you can see everything in your gut. But then that technology is being outdated too, because you can't see fungi or yeast. You can't see parasites or viruses. You can only see bacteria. You know, our guts have majority bacteria. You want majority bacteria. You don't want fungi or parasites.
Yeah.
But 16S has a lot of limitations and false positives. But that was initially what some of these early like gut microbiome testing companies use, 16S. Now we've progressed to shotgun sequencing, and there's RNA sequencing too. So we use a Tiny Health shotgun metagenomic sequencing because it is the latest and greatest technology that scientists use in research. So when you read these papers, when I was reading these papers, I was reading shotgun sequencing and I wanted that to be what we used. So we've come a long way in using these different technologies to map the human gut microbiome. And we know so much more about the different strains, and each strain performs a different function, right? Even E. coli strains, like there are some E. coli strains that are neutral, and there are some that are really virulent, right? And so we are about to be able to tell you in your report what kinds of E. coli strains you have. So, you know, even though like people are like, oh, you know, some doctors do dismiss gut testing and stool testing and all that, because I think it's just really hard to keep up with the changing technology, right?
Yeah. And plus their patients, it's like, I actually have compassion for them, not only for the 4 to 7 minutes they get for each patient, but also, how do they make, quote, quote, air quotes, their patient change their lifestyle? Mm-hmm. It's so hard going back to this internal versus external locus of control. Mm-hmm. So in behavior change, I remember I was interviewing a guy named Nir Eyal, and he wrote a book and he had this hook model where for true behavior change to occur, there has to be some kind of variable reward. Mm-hmm. So there has to be a stimuli that changes that gives feedback on the reward that the person is actually working on. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really fascinating because with your test, it's this series of really rewards or just series of recalculations, right? It's 3 to 4 times a year people do the test, yes? For both
babies,
and parent and whole family.
Yeah.
And that, you know what's crazy? I mean, I'll say it. I know you can't say this, but I'll say it. I think just having a quarterly check-in of how am I doing on the inside? How is my child or children doing on the inside? Mm-hmm. It can most likely, I know we can't quantify this, but I can. It can most likely save thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in medical, maybe even tens of thousands of dollars later on by just being proactive. It's like proactive wellness care is actually what is being called forth here instead of reactive sick care.
Yeah.
There's a total paradigm shift that's happening. And it's not just with me. It's every single person in our audience. It's all the different media people that I'm connected to. Mm-hmm. Everybody's aware of this N=1 citizen scientist taking my health and my family's health in my hands. Mm-hmm. But for you, has this come up? Like, look, there's a cost for everything in life, right? Mm-hmm. There's a cost to go drink on the weekend and do drugs and unhealthy things. Or there's a few $100 to get your gut tested and your family's gut tested. Mm-hmm. To me, it's a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. But how do you overcome that? In other words, you have to pay your staff, you have to pay your labs, you have so much overhead that you have to do. How did you make this so affordable? It's very affordable for families to do.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to what insurance premiums are and the cost of being sick, this is absolutely nothing. But how do you do that?
Well, shotgun sequencing is coming down, right? If you look at, you know, the cost it used to sequence your DNA, it used to be in the tens and thousands of dollars.
That's right. And the computer used to fill a whole room.
Yeah. Yeah. So yes. Innovation, right? I mean, we're thankful for technology and sequencing methods. And it's, you know, sequencing costs are halving every 2 years. So even at this price point of like about $200, it's maybe less affordable for certain families. For certain families, they do 4 or 5 times a year. You know, we are still trying to make it more affordable. But you're right, this is a form of prevention and being proactive. You know, a lot of our parents come to us when their kids have symptoms, though. Like, you know, 70% of our parents.
That's how I found you.
Yes. Yeah. You know, like, you know, it is really hard to sell prevention, right?
Yeah.
But it's funny, like you talk about behavioral change and the one time in your life where you're most likely to change your behavior is when your child is born, right? Like, you know, it's kind of like easy to excuse when you're like, you know, an adult in your 20s, you're like, ah, it's okay, I can handle it, it's whatever. And then once your kid is born, you're like, everything
changes.
Is about them. And which is kind of why when we work in the mom and baby space, we see their baby's born and they have colicky symptoms or sleep issues or eczema. And, you know, their parents are willing to do anything to improve their health, right? So it is, you know, in a way warranted because that critical time point is so crucial to course correct.
Yeah.
After 3 years old, it doesn't mean you can't change your child's microbiome. It's just harder, right? Mm. And like I said, in infancy, you can change a baby's microbiome in a few weeks, in a month.
One thing that was really fascinating you said is for the first 6 months, if I heard you correctly, you're basically filling those 10 seats in the theater through strictly mother's milk. Mm-hmm. That's all that's happening for the majority of it, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And then after those 6 months, like I think we came to you, I'm trying to remember, I know Carrie Michelle would know the exact dates, but I feel like it was like at the 9 month mark or 12 month mark that we found Tiny Health. Mm-hmm. Because his stool was just all over the place. Mm. So if anybody's ever dealt with this with your children, on the screen right now, it's joshtrend.com/tinyhealth. So just click that link on the screen right now and you'll have a resource for what we're talking about. Because every day it'd be different. And I just intuitively was like, this isn't normal. Like this isn't normal for him to be having hard, loose, medium, soft. It's just not, because we were feeding him very great foods. We were feeding him organic foods. We thought we were feeding him healthy. But we didn't know that he needed more fermented foods. We didn't know that he needed, there was a specific supplement that we actually got turned on by.
He was missing key bacteria.
Some key bacteria. He had dysbiosis. And by the way, can dysbiosis ever be healthy? Is there a healthy form of dysbiosis?
There's too much of something. Yeah, we do have that measurement in our tests, like overabundant species is the metric. Because you want a well-balanced, diverse gut, right? And so in some guts we see, like if you have 20, you know, in babies, you do have like 90% of a single microbe, for example, and that is considered healthy. So that's why I created a baby gut test, because a baby's gut in the first 6 months looks very different from a 30, 40-year-old's gut. You cannot use an adult range for a baby. Right?
Sure.
So what's healthy for an infant is not healthy for an adult. So in the first year, you can find a species that's 90%, like one species, because remember, it's like 10 seats, right? So it represents a lot more. One species represents a lot more space in your gut.
Yeah.
But as you grow older, after 3 years of age, if anything is more than 15% relative abundance in your gut, it's too much of one. Surely your diversity is going to get flagged. You're not, you know, so you could have maybe like, which is why probiotic supplementation, in a way, there is a danger of oversupplementing a child with probiotics or even adults, right? If it colonizes, it may hamper the natural diversification that you want in a kid who's eating solids and exposed to a lot of different environmental microbes. So now we have the technology. We should test, not guess, when you supplement, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's such a key phrase. Like, do not guess, because if you guess, you're most likely going to be wrong unless you have actual data, quantified data to make real data-driven decisions from. It's so funny. People, they stock their pantry. Mm-hmm. So they know when they look in their pantry, I have this many cans of beans, I have this. Why don't we take an inventory of what's going on in us? It's the same exact thing. So if you're a parent or if you're just somebody that wants a healthy gut, take an inventory.
Yeah, especially probiotics, right? When, you know, it's like, is every probiotic supplement equal? No, they're not equal, right? There are some really clinically backed strains, it comes down to the strain level. So make sure if you're taking a probiotic, you are looking at clinically backed strains. And then what some companies do is they kind of like, oh, these are all clinically backed strains individually, and they mix it together and think that the gut will, you know, it will survive the gut. When you take that pill, the capsule is supposed to also protect the probiotic strains until it reaches the gut. But not all capsules are made equal. Some capsules just dissipate quickly. And certain good bacteria, as I mentioned earlier, if they're exposed to oxygen, they die.
Oh, yeah.
So most probiotics don't get to your gut, right? So they're not all equal. You have to find a legitimate company and brand. And I am actually pretty proud because we are the first consumer company that launched strain tracking. So if you are taking a probiotic supplement, you can see that strain colonizing your gut if it's meant to colonize. Mm. So, you know, if your child is, you know, if you're giving your child an infant probiotic, you will probably see that strain in their gut if it's working. We have seen some probiotics just never colonize, and we have that data because we have so much data now. And there's one company, I'm not going to name it, that uses water as the medium. And we think that the water is killing the bacteria. Oh. So we don't recommend that brand anymore. But right. From our data, we actually can see what actually works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
So we're trying to bring more transparency to the supplement industry because there's a lot of snake oil. There's a lot of claims that are not FDA approved or regulated. But because we have the sequencing technology and a strain capacity, we can tell, we can show that.
Cheryl, I think people would literally drop their jaw to the floor if they realized how much money they were wasting on supplements. I read some data a past week ago that we basically absorb maybe 20%, sometimes 40% of the supplements that we eat because they go through the HCL in the gut and it just basically liquefies and we never actually get it. Mm-hmm. So my friend Alex from this company Eons, shout out to Eons, they developed this technology called QuickZone where you put it under your tongue and it gets directly into your bloodstream. So powerful. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering like, oh my gosh, can we just do this for all supplementation?
Yeah.
Because it's almost like bypassing the gut. This is why IVs are so popular mm-hmm. because they don't have to go through that traditional system. What do you make of that for probiotics? Do you think that probiotics and gut health supplements could ever do what they're supposed to do without being swallowed?
I mean, there's suppositories for the vaginal microbiome.
Yeah.
So there are different routes, but by and large, I mean, the oral route is the easiest, right? Mm-hmm, but there are differences in capsules and quality and the different strains in it. Like I said, different strains have different functions. You can't just expect to take an off-the-shelf formulation, and it depends what you're looking to fix, right? What are you deficient in? You know, like there's this notion of like, let me just take one a day for good health, but do you really need it, right?
Sure.
I mean, I have a more natural philosophy in terms of like a lot of these things you can do through diet. So increasing fermented foods, but again, not all fermented foods are equal, right? You can buy very sugary yogurts that may have a counter effect if they have emulsifiers and added sugar and things like that. Like your Danone yogurt. We make our own kefir from our own grains, our own kefir grains, right? It has way more natural probiotics in it than a store-bought one. So there's a lot of things that, you know, I think you can maintain through diet and health, you know, a well-balanced diet. But I do think you should check in. If there are deficiencies, then sometimes supplementation can get you to back to a baseline that you want, and then you have to maintain it through diet, right? So I'm off that philosophy rather than just doing popping pills every single day, hoping that would fix your issues.
I think we have this bias where as long as we're being like a good little boy and a good little girl and taking our vitamins, I mean, look at the conditioning that's happening in our world right now. Mm-hmm. Look what happened in 2020, the reason that we moved out here. There is a war for the mind, and that war is coming a lot of times from financial interest about mm-hmm. you should buy this product because it benefits this company the most. So this company mm-hmm. is going to feed that information to the media, specifically Super Bowl commercials. And look at all this stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. what's going on with the pharma industry, advertising on television. Mm-hmm. There's another way. There's another game we can play. Mm-hmm. And that game is actually where you just take your health in your hands mm-hmm. and you do something every day, even if it's just you exploring something like getting some chickens or, you know, trying to sprout some grains or having kefir. Like there's so many things that people can do. I wonder though for this, and this is something that I know so many moms deal with. I've seen this in our forums. I've had moms email me this, especially when We did some of the content around our birth stories for Carrie Michelle when she had her VBAC. For the moms that have cesareans, what is the repair process for the baby's gut?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we now have the C-section signature in our reports, because that was the thing I read, you know, where if it's removed by 1 year, the asthma risk is reduced by 3 times. We have that indicator. So there are ways you can restore that. And we see that so easy to restore in our moms and parents. Breastfeeding is the number one most restorative. Again, like, you know, I would encourage mom to also check in, because most of the time, if you did have a C-section, you would have gone through the operation and you were exposed to antibiotics, right? So bifidobacteria is the most important bacteria in the first year of life for your baby. Mm. And it's also the most sensitive to antibiotics. So usually in even adults, right, if you take a round of antibiotics, most likely your bifs are gone and wiped out. And it's really hard to restore that. Mine was zero. It took me 6 to 9 months of really hard work to get that back up to like 8%, right? And in infants, you should see about 50 to 90% of bifs in the first year of life, actually. So that is really the number one thing you want to see. I specifically want to see bifidobacteria infantis in my child, because that's the most efficient at digesting the HMOs in breast milk. There's 4 strains, mm, basically: B. infantis, B. breve, B. longum, and B. bifidum. Hopefully this is not too crazy.
Very
scientific.
Yeah.
Yes, it's yeah. These are the 4 most important microbes that you want to see in your child.
Okay.
And so there are ways. So if mom had one of these 4, she will pass it on through her breast milk, hopefully. And we've seen a lot of that in our tests. If mom doesn't have it and baby doesn't have it, then a probiotic, a high quality probiotic that has one of those strains or a combination of those strains will be important to supplement to baby. And then once your baby, you know, and a lot of C-section born babies, or even just babies exposed to antibiotics through NICU or whatever, ear infections, they have zero. And within 1 month of supplementation, they go from 0 to 90% of bifidobacteria. And when that happens, it really crowds out the pathogenic bacteria. So all the E. coli type bacteria is pushed out and symptoms do go away. Mm. So we see, although we see initial symptoms where if you imagine 9 out of 10 seats are E. coli type bacteria and the good bacteria is coming in fighting the bad bacteria, pushing it all out, initially the baby's going to feel discomfort. And, you know, kind of like we get reports of like extra gassiness, stool being really, really off.
Yeah.
But we do tell them, with their physician's approval, of course, to persist 1 to 2 weeks with careful monitoring. Start them with a lower dose, to start them with half the dose and increase it slowly. Because your gut, your baby's gut is trying to like completely change out the who's in charge, right? Who's in the, yeah, the baby's gut. But that, you know, is really crucial in the first 6 months, first 12 months of life. And it's very easy to get that. I also want to mention, you mentioned a lot about the healthcare system and all that. And I want to talk a bit about antibiotics, right? Because, you know, I forget what the stats are, but something like an average kid gets 2 rounds of antibiotics in the first year of life because of ear infections. And ear infections are like so common these days. I'm not sure if your kids have had it.
No, thank God, knock on wood. We've not gotten them any jabs, no vaccines, nothing. They're purely natural children.
Yeah, any medication may have side effects, right?
Yeah.
And these bifs are so sensitive to medication, like including maybe, I don't want to get to the vaccine discussion, but you know, antibiotics could just wipe it out and it's really hard to bounce back,
yeah,
if you don't do some restoration. But here's the fact. Most ear infections are viral. They're not even bacterial. But if you just take your child to your pediatrician, they're going to say, take antibiotics, right? Because
yeah,
I'm thankful both my kids had no ear infections at all until recently. So when my son is 3.5 years old, finally he had an ear infection. So I took him to the Minute Clinic. And the first thing the nurse said was like, antibiotics. And like, how do you know it's bacterial? Because I know what questions I should ask, right? And she's like, we don't, but just in case. And then, oh, like, does he have an ear infection in the other ear?
Let's destroy his gut just in case.
She didn't know anything about gut, yeah, health, right? And so I'm like, she told me if the ear infection is in one ear, but not the other ear, is bacterial. So then I'm like, oh, really? So I texted my my advisor, my medical advisor, Dr. Alyssa Saw, who's, you know, functionally trained. She's a pediatrician in California. She's like, there's no such thing. Like, you know, there's nothing in medical literature that says if it's one-sided, it's bacterial. So in fact, she was like, here's what I would do. She gave me this whole protocol of like, you know, increases vitamin C by like 10x, like 10,000 milligrams throughout the day. And you have to do it every hour because vitamin C dissipates quickly. Increases vitamin D and, you know, vitamin A. And I had this whole list and herbs and things like that. When I finally bought all that, those supplements, it cost me $200. And the antibiotics that the nurse prescribed was $3. So it is interesting, right? Like we are getting subsidized for antibiotics, right? Yeah. Medication. And of course, in some instances, if you do get strep throat, you do need antibiotics, and that could be life-saving. But I think you need to advocate for, you know, you need to do your research, your own research, right? And unfortunately, the healthcare system doesn't reimburse supplements, but, you know, I'm fortunate to be able to afford it, but not every family can.
Yeah.
So I persisted. I fed him all the supplements. It was painful. And sometimes I doubted myself, should I give it to him? Because I had that in hand, the antibiotics. But I'm like, I went by my gut. I felt like he was improving. And someone even told me, the nurse told me, even giving my child antibiotics, it would take him a few days to feel better because that would take time to take effect. So I'm just going to wait. So I told myself, I'm just going to wait. And he did improve and nothing happened.
Yeah.
And then a week later, I think I got ear infection too. And I did the same protocol. I had the same supplements. And I did the same thing. I went to my doctor and was prescribed antibiotics, but persisted. And so now I'm like, a lot of parents just need tools, right? They just like, you know, it's really scary in that time point where you're seeing your child cry and suffer. Ugh,
it's
and
the worst. In pain. I'll do anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we, you know, it's not, again, like doctors are there for a good reason. And but if that's the only thing you're prescribed, then that's what you're going to do. So we don't blame people for, you know, and again, sometimes it is needed, right? Just like my C-section was really needed.
Yeah.
But if parents are equipped with education, like, is it really bacterial? Is it viral? Could it be viral? And have the toolkit and the confidence that if I give my kid these supplements and I'm seeing him improve, then I have confidence that he's going to get better, right? So I would have reverted to giving him antibiotics. But if I had to give him antibiotics, I have his baseline sample from before. And I can take a sample 4 weeks post antibiotics and see how much his gut health was affected and then figure out how to get him back to baseline, right?
Sure.
What was now was there before and now missing because of the treatment and guide me to it. So that's what we want to be. We want to be a resource for parents, not to name or shame and not to like point fingers and anything. It's to give you the data to empower you to make these decisions, right? I'm a data geek. So to me, more data is better, and I know what to do from there.
I love it. Wow, I really loved so much how you just shared. You got the infection the very next week, and then you just went through the protocol, and then obviously it's not medical advice. I hate that we have to say that, y'all, but you already know it's like not medical advice, right?
Yes.
But then you actually you cured yourself. You healed yourself by doing that.
Yes, yes, for sure. That's a big caveat, but I only say that to, you know, kind of paint a picture that you do have to, you don't have to always do what your doctor tells you to do in a
That's
way.
Right.
Just
right.
Do your own research, right? Read labels, read ingredients, read about side effects, and you make your own call. Everything is a trade-off in life, right? There is a risk for everything, right? So you need to, as a parent, you know best, and you should advocate for your and your kid's health.
Listen, Cheryl, if you and I had to ask permission for every decision that we thought we should ask permission for, we would never be the heads of businesses. We would never be moving forward in life. It just would not happen. And it's the same thing when it comes to sick care or just care in any way. The whole point with science is that the Socratic method is always there to be challenged. Mm-hmm. That's the basis of all science is the Socratic method. Can you prove and disprove based on theorem? Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of it all. But I think people forget that because they just do whatever is easy because they're so overwhelmed with their life and responsibilities.
Correct. People don't have time anymore.
Exactly. They don't have the time to figure it out. But I say, you actually do have the time. Like, we all have 24 hours in a day. We all have disposable income. Some of us have more than others. But there's ways in which we can take the income we have and use it so we're actually feeding us instead of monetizing a broken system of like going and drinking on the weekends, even doing unconscious behavior sexually with people. Like, look at how many bars exist. Look at how much unconscious behavior exists in our country that is just fueling people to give the excuse that they don't have time, that they don't have money, that they just, they can't deal with it right now. But you're right. When we have kids, everything changes. You start looking at life through a different lens of responsibility and maturation. And before you know it, you're just putting that same lens on yourself. I think that's the one of the beauties of being a parent, is that you actually start to learn from your children in ways in which you can parent yourself again. And there's so much deep richness and wholeness there. It almost makes me want to cry just talking about it. It's so beautiful. Because for all y'all that don't have kids yet, like, this is just as important for you, because the child inside of you needs a healthy gut. So whether you have kids or you're just tending to the child inside of you metaphorically, it's so, so, so important.
It's also operating from fear, right? I think sometimes, again, like that fear of like, oh, what if I, you know, don't do this and do that? What if, like, you know, we have some moms who did go through a C-section and had so much guilt, you know, and coming out of it. And when they test their child's microbiome, it was perfect because they breastfed, it did all the right things. And for them, it was kind of a relief, right? A point of relief, right? So I think there's a lot to be said about, you know, even our healthcare system. Like, if you don't take this medication, you're gonna, you know, you're gonna, you know, get infection and things like that. That's a lot of fear. And sometimes you react to like, okay, I'm just gonna take it because I'm worried I'm gonna get XYZ. Where I would say is like, do your research. I think just don't kind of react out of fear. Like, I think it's worth researching your health, like when it comes to your kid's health and your health. I think it's good to see both sides of the table. And like, you know, I know not everyone has the time to read through papers, but at the very least, we at Tiny Health, we are, you know, I've become the company I wish I had when, you know, I gave birth to my first child, right? I was doing all this research. I'm like, I'm not a scientist. Am I interpreting this paper correctly? So I want to toe the line of like, you know, this is what we know, and this is like the scientific evidence and where it is. And it's just information. It's just education. We're just putting it out there for you. Ultimately, you have to feel empowered to make your own call, your own decisions, right? You're in charge of your own health. Yeah. Don't let anyone tell you what to do.
Exactly. Yeah. The more you just become an automaton, the more you're actually in slavery. So we have a community. It's on the screen right now. Liberatedlife.me. This is exactly the tribe, the place where we're talking about these resources, because what makes us empowered is actually being resourceful. I think what really disempowers us is when we tell ourselves an unconscious story that we can't find the answer, or that everything's figure outable. I'm sure you know this as an entrepreneur, especially as a mom, especially as a wife, especially as a human who just wants to continually evolve her consciousness and my consciousness. I feel the same. Everything's figure outable, but we have to come from a mindset that it actually is possible and we can figure it out. I think what happens is when the gut-brain axis gets incredible dysbiosis, like if somebody's having soda and Cheetos and just no greens, no healthy proteins, no healthy fats, over time, it can actually, and this is the point I want to ask you, it can actually profoundly stick people in that state of disempowerment because an unhealthy gut
cycle
feeds an unhealthy brain, which feeds unhealthy actions. So the gut to the brain to the human behavior is a clear, clear connection in my mind, especially after 10 years of having conversations like this. But I wonder for you how you see that play out. The emotional quotient to gut dysbiosis is very big. It's very big. I wonder if you can comment on that.
Maybe not so much on the research. I haven't looked into that specifically.
Well, just anecdotally then.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get the answer from you non-scientifically.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, right? I think like when you're stressed, it does impact your gut function and your ability to digest certain foods. Like even like if you think about like if you're eating in a stress state, right? You're rushed into eating and you're not digesting it through your saliva, as we mentioned earlier. And that gets, you know, your digestion probably is affected.
Sure.
So you probably see a lot of those in our reports in the digestive function section. But absolutely, there's a connection.
Yeah, the stress goes top down and bottom up. So I thought it was really interesting when you said suppositories. One of our other partners that we have that we're talking about in liberatedlife.me, along with Tiny Health, is the company called SciFox, where you can do blood testing. I don't know if you've heard of SciFox before. So I think there's like an arsenal that we can have to just, you know, fortify ourselves. Tiny Health for our gut. And that's, by the way, for dads, for moms, for family, for baby. Like, that's a really big specialty that I think you have cracked the code on in a really cool way. And then SciFox for our blood and testing our hormones and testosterone for men. And then also there's some other companies that I think are coming into this world as well. There's genomic testing. There's all kinds of really cool things. Mm-hmm. At the nexus of all this, at the intersection of all this, is a mom, a dad, a woman, a man, a human being that just wants to thrive. Mm-hmm. Isn't that really what we're looking for? We just want to thrive. We want to live well. We want to have energy to show up for conversations like this. We want to have presence. We want to enjoy our life. Mm-hmm. And I think if that's the end goal and we can all just really congregate and have a conversation about that being the desired end goal, yeah, I think we're going to end up in a good place. As long as we don't get caught only in the logical academia of it, which is important. Mm-hmm. There's two worlds there. How do you hold those worlds? How do you hold the world of academia and science and numbers and literature and studies and you being a loving, committed mom and a wife?
Yeah.
That's a challenging world to hold both of those.
It is important, right? Like, I think a lot of people see Tiny Health as the merge between the two. We have really credible scientists on our team and our board, from Johns Hopkins, from Washington University, from USC and all that, Cornell. And yet we have a lot of functionally trained practitioners on our team as well to bring the more holistic environment or education to our platform. So, you know, not everything, you know, a lot of it, you know, that said, in our reports, everything is scientifically backed. Everything is evidence-based because we want to make sure at the very minimum we can see, you know, some backing behind that. But then we're also very like, you know, we understand that, you know, there are, you know, medicine, you know, like you said, Western medicine isn't, you know, it's maybe 10 years behind academic research, right? Mm-hmm. So this is where, you know, we are a wellness test. We're educational. We're not diagnostic and we're not prescribing anything. We do tell you to work with your practitioner. But we hope that, you know, this brings you more clarity on the data that's out there right now. And it's a living, breathing thing. Like, we don't just, it's not static. A lot of our reference ranges change over time. As we get more and more data, we understand better what's a healthy state, what's an unhealthy disease state. And we modify our reference ranges to kind of like expand our knowledge into what we know now. So, and then, you know, the point about the family health too. So we started with the mom and baby gut tests. And we had a vaginal test for moms too. And we do recommend you like people doing it even preconception, right? Because I think it's important to prepare the vaginal and the gut microbiome before the birthing event. But as we grow our consumers, we have an older child's test and we have adult tests. Dads want to test too, right? Like I said, we talked earlier, dads influences can influence the baby's gut. And, but even, you know, sort of like if you're single, you don't have a kid yet, you know, you just want to test, you can come too. But as it relates to family, we now have a family membership. The reason why, you know, we, you know, you can't just restore your, you know, we talk about behavior change earlier and how when you're a parent, you would do anything for your kid, right? So a lot of parents come to us restoring their kid's microbiome, their child's microbiome, but you can't just do that one time point and be like, okay, I'm done. You know, it's a lifestyle, right? It's a continuous lifestyle. And your child is going to grow older and eat the same foods you eat, you put on the table. They're going to live in the same environment, housing environment. They're going to do the same things you do. So if you have poor gut health, your kid's, you know, gut health is going to kind of trend towards your gut health. So in a way, we want parents to understand they have to work, you know, they have to work on their gut health too. So one like funny story, like we were living in California before this. We just moved to Austin, Texas 2 years ago. And, you know, because I run Tiny Health, we do whole family testing. I test everyone twice a year proactively. When I tested my family, I think 6 months to a year after we moved here, everyone's gut health dropped, was worse.
Maybe it's the barbecue.
Like, oh no. Like, you know, well, in California we were grateful to be exposed to really fresh produce from farmers market.
Sure,
we buy organic. We, you know, our water source is amazing there. And then here I hadn't figured out the supply yet, you know, and now, you know, knowing what I knew about our gut health, try to look for better sources from farms. I have a beef share that comes, you know, twice a year. We do raw milk from a local dairy here and things like that. But then we started having skin conditions. So I'm like, oh no, like why is our microbiome not improving? It actually kind of like was still not good. Then we finally tested our water. So we get water from Lake Austin, and there's lead arsenic and uranium in our water. So we already do an RO system for our drinking water, but when we shower, especially during the winter, we're sure. doing hot showers and yeah. it's getting into our skin, right? We're breathing it in. We gargle when we wash our, you know, brush our teeth with water. So now I got my husband to install whole house filtration and we're about to retest our whole family. And I hope that our gut health is on the mend and improving. But there's always things like that, right? Moving, you know, sure. you're about to move, yeah. hopefully for, yeah. you know, the yeah. better state. But there's a lot of reasons why you should be proactive about
Absolutely.
Your gut health.
Oh my God. So beautiful, your story, because everybody can relate to just when they do things like they move or big significant life changes, they go to a different state, all of a sudden they just feel different. There's a mm-hmm. reason for that. And it's how we started this conversation. It's because there's so much going on that mm-hmm. we can't, there's a whole world that mm-hmm. we can't see that's so important. And I really feel like this is a window into that world. So thank you so much for doing what you do. It's an incredibly challenging and complicated world. And I feel like with the dashboard and the report, this is one thing that I want to just give you a huge shout out on. Having somebody walk you through this and like explain to you how to make sense of it all in like 20 minutes or 30 minutes, so worth it. Yeah. So worth it. And you've included that now, which is so beautiful. It's the power of technology. You don't have to go to a doctor's office. You can just meet with somebody virtually. It makes such a difference when a human being is actually communicating to you and sharing with you about mm-hmm. what the numbers mean, what the supplements mean, what the dysbiosis means.
Yeah.
So for people that don't know, let's tell them just on a high level where they can go, what they can do. The link is on the screen, joshtrin.com/tinyhealth. By the way, you gave us $20 off. Thank you for that. It's so generous.
Of course.
Like I said, it's not cheap. It's not easy to mm-hmm. do this. So the code is Josh20. If you enter that in the cart on the Tiny Health website, then you can get $20 off your first order. So just tell people where to go if they want to connect with you. You're on Instagram. Are you personally on Instagram? I know Tiny Health is on Instagram.
I am. Yeah.
Where can
yeah.
they discover more?
Yeah. Tinyhealth.com. So again, tiny for tiny babies, but also tiny microbes in your gut. And yeah. we're not just for babies. We're also for adults. Yeah. I'm pretty responsive on Instagram. So you can always like DM me at tiny.health. And then I also, as even though we've grown so much over the past couple of years, I read almost every hello@tinyhealthemail.com because oh, cool. I really care about what our consumers think and, you know, feedback that we get. I may not respond to every one of them, but I do get a good sense of what people are, you know, asking and, you know, like emailing about.
What are the main things right now? Is there a through line that people are constantly asking about? Like, is there a main topic or two or three that most parents are concerned yeah, or just human beings are?
We're very popular with kids who have eczema and okay. allergies, right? Because yeah. again, it's so connected to the gut, and this is where we can help. I would say as early as possible. Like again, eczema is really tricky when you have a 2-3-year-old still with eczema symptoms. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is important to course correct in the first 6 months of life, first 12 months of life, if possible. Yeah.
yeah.
So, but we get those questions a lot. And then lately, sleep, you know, that's been a really popular trend for us. A lot of, you know, babies don't sleep well, right? Sure. But there is a difference. So like, it's funny, my C-section born daughter has never slept well. She's just, you know, always been a light sleeper and never had more than 45 minute naps as a baby. And my vaginally born son can sleep 2-3 hours. He can take 2-3 hour naps, no problem.
Wow.
Till today, they're like that, right? And I don't know, a lot of things that we read in literature, like our data maps back to that. We see as, you know, a baby who can't sleep well, there is a signature in their guts to show that.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating.
It's fascinating. And again, it's this world we cannot see, but there's a world that we can all see, and that's our skin health, our hair health, our physical body, how much fat we carry, our presence, our posture. All these things I feel like are clues to how somebody is well or not well.
Yeah, there are symptoms, but sometimes almost like when you do have symptoms, it's a little not too late, but it's like, you know, you want to check your gut as a leading indicator before the symptoms exist, right? Yeah. Ideally, and fix it.
And we didn't talk about it. Maybe we can do another podcast at some time. The connection between the foods we eat and our skin health. Oh my God, that is an entire
there
show.
There's a skin-gut axis too.
There's a skin-gut axis. See, this is what we have to do round two. Okay, so at the nexus point that I talked about, there's all these converging scientific bodies, you being one of them, that can really take people out of the office of doctorhood and bring them into their living room on a computer getting well, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. Our ancestors would have been so stoked.
They would have said, oh my God, I had to travel half a day to go to some country doctor wearing a stethoscope. And now you can do it on Zoom. In 20
minutes. We try to make our reports easy to understand. There are a lot of other gut tests out there. Their reports are, I think, less easy to understand. And we try to make it very actionable. What can you do from a diet perspective? What can you do from a supplements perspective? And we include brands we recommend. And we have advice on lifestyle changes, right? Like, for example, it's not just like, oh, get exposed to more animals and nature. A lot of people don't know about the cleaning supplies. Our household cleaning supplies are really toxic. For sure. You know, from COVID, we are so used to seeing antibacterial soap, but certain ingredients in there can get into your gut. And if you're thinking about your baby crawling your floors and, you know, kind of like licking everything, if they're licking antibacterial ingredients, it could affect their gut too. So we do recommend people to swap out to cleaner, non-toxic brands, things like that. It's very actionable. I do want to say, I never want to be a supplement company, because I know a lot of some gut testing companies tell you to take their supplements, right? Sure, sure. So I think there's a little bit of a conflict of interest there. And I'd rather kind of like, here are the things you're missing. Go find your own brands, or here are brands we trust and recommend from our own clinical, you know, our scientific team vets these products and look at all the papers supporting the supplements, actually. So if it does exist in our report results, we have either kind of thoroughly checked that, or we've seen data within our results or our testing platform that it works in consumers.
I notice you have an Oura Ring. Is that an Oura Ring? Okay, yes. I have two. I'm actually using an Ultra Human an Oura Ring. I'm doing an A-B test right now. I love data. I think it's great. Yeah. And I know that my intellectualism and my striving for data and proof and evidence can never, ever outweigh the love that I have for my children and the anecdotal experience that I have when I hold my healthy son or I hold my healthy daughter. Now, when it comes to you being healthy, how do you, to ask it again, because this is one of my favorite questions in the world, how do you hold the world of data and science and also being a mother? And how do you have wellness in the middle of those two for you? How do you actually live well with one foot in science, one foot in spirituality? I don't know if you have a belief in a higher power or not. Do you? Do you believe in some sort of higher power?
I do. I just don't know what it is.
Great. Okay. Well, there's a mystery there that you are connected to. So both of these worlds in the center is you. And how do you define wellness there? Like, what does it mean to live your life well? How does Cheryl define wellness as a mother, as an entrepreneur, doing so many things?
Definitely hard. It's competing priorities, right? But at the end of the day, it's kind of being at peace with yourself and also knowing that in that time point, you're doing your best. And as long as I feel like I'm doing my best, then I'm at peace, you know, because we can't have it all, we can't do it all.
Yeah.
But for me, there's, you know, I think seasonalities of things I try to kind of improve, right? So every season I pick two things to focus on. So this season is sleep, which is why I just got my Oura Ring. I'm realizing that through just education of my Oura Ring that if I sleep really late because I'm working up at night, then I'm losing the deep sleep, which is important for restoration.
Yeah.
And then if my kids are waking me up really early, I'm losing the REM sleep. So I'm not getting the memory and, you know, I'm not cognitively as sharp, right? So learning that has really helped me. I'm also focusing on blue light, you know, with the sleep thing, you know, replacing a lot of my light bulbs. You know, my husband thinks I'm crazy. Everything's red and orange now in our house at night.
Love it.
Blue light glasses and things like that. So like, you know, just two things at a time, you know, I, you know, previous seasons, I got rid of plastic and my microwave oven. Because, you know, like when I even birthed my son with a VBAC 4 years ago, I the first 6 weeks of my postpartum meal were all microwaved food in plastic.
Oh.
It's crazy. This is before I learned about microplastics.
You didn't know.
And how it got to, which is why I cringe when I say that, right? But that was what I... You know, at that time point, this is how much I knew, right? So in a way, like you can hit yourself or like, how could I have done that to myself and my infant, right? I was breastfeeding. It probably ruined his gut too. Thankfully, I was starting Tiny Health around that time and I was like becoming more aware of these things.
Yeah.
So in some sense, to answer your question, it's like being, you know, also forgiving to yourself that in that moment of what you knew, you were trying your best. And yeah, like, you know, I think doing your best and not being too hard on yourself.
Yeah. From a cultural perspective, I know, so are you of what nationality are you?
National. Well, I'm American now, but I grew up in Malaysia.
Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So I don't know the culture there. I'm a bit uneducated about Malaysia. Is their culture similar to the surrounding cultures as far as work ethic and hard chargingness around work?
It's a pretty Asian culture, like a little bit of less forgiving, I think, like more academic focus.
Okay.
It's a British colony, so it's more Commonwealth, you know.
The reason I ask that is because there's certain cultures in the world, and you can even find, I guess, that culture definitely in America, overworking, not enough sleep.
Yeah.
So wherever we are in the world, there's just certain ways that I think we just are being called to forgive ourselves for. I mean, there's so much shame around overworking, and you're only as good as a man as how many zeros are on your bank account. Mm-hmm. You're only as good as a woman as how perfect you look. It's all bullshit. Mm-hmm. None of it's real. It's just a construct, much like I have to get sick and then go to the doctor as a construct. It's the same thing. So thank you for breaking the construct, not just with Tiny Health, but with yourself, mm-hmm. you know? That having an entrepreneur and a CEO on the show saying forgiveness is part of my wellness practice, mm-hmm. I can get on board with that. That's really what the world needs. So thank you for holding those two worlds and doing what you do. Again, the link is on the screen right now. We covered so much ground in this invisible world. Mm-hmm. Look, there's many more podcasts about this, I think, because gosh, you could probably spend an entire podcast on the skin axis that you talked about. Mm-hmm. But what is something that you've been wanting to share in the world about Tiny Health, about the tininess in our own gut and the care of the tiny babies for this gut testing and so much and so forth. What is something you've been wanting to share that maybe we haven't touched upon today that we haven't covered?
We covered a little bit. We were really excited about a new membership that we're launching called Tiny Plus. So it's a membership for your whole family. Basically, it's a $399 membership that comes with two gut tests, or could be a vaginal test too, and one consult call. But you can buy more kits for your whole family for $169 per kit. It's a really great deal, and it keeps you kind of, you know, this whole membership notion really plays into the fact, you know, what we talked about in terms of, you know, testing your gut or the gut health is not a point in time. It's really like longevity. You want that longitudinal data. When you see how your gut baseline, what your gut baseline is and how that changes over time with diet, environment, where you live and things like that, it really gives you really interesting data. Yeah. And it helps you, you know, identify areas you want to improve.
You can make good decisions when you have good data.
Yes.
But if the data is not good, if it hasn't been vetted, well, your decisions might not be that great. Thank you for coming on the show and being here in the studio. It's so much more fun to do this in person.
Yes.
So thank you for dedicating time for this. And when we get chickens, I'll make sure that we share notes, okay? We can get maybe some chicken feed and chicken coops. Okay, y'all, make sure you go to the show notes for this show. It's linked right here on the screen. And share this with somebody who's been struggling with maybe mood or skin issues. Maybe their children are up all the time. Just somebody that you intuitively feel would feel the way that you feel inspired by this podcast. Share this podcast with them and go over to the show notes. It's linked right below. Until Cheryl and I see you again, we're both wishing you love and wellness. We'll talk to you soon. You know, we live in this world of spirituality. As I've always said on every show, almost, we are half beast, half spirit. So how do we care for both? How do we take care of our physical health, our gut health, our micronutrients, and at the same time, practice self-love that is connected to spiritual growth, to a creator, to something outside of ourselves, at least? I'm not here to tell you what to believe, but I am here to offer you a different perspective about how to get energy from your body from the inside out. It's not just through breath work, and it's not just through exercise or training. We actually need, on a biochemical level, the micronutrients that our body is missing from today's depleted soil and also, unfortunately, depleted animals, because the animals eat the grass and then we eat the animals. Now, whether you're vegan or not, I have something amazing for you. Organifi Red Juice. I mean, full transparency, it's not actually a juice. You turn it into a juice. It's a transportable powder. You can get it in a packet form. It's incredible. The ingredients are truly next level. And by the way, they're 100% organically certified, which honestly, almost no other product out there can say. Cordyceps, all kinds of powerful adaptogens. Adaptogens are micronutrients that go into your body and bring you back to center, bring you back to homeostasis. I love it. It's what I do before the sauna, before a workout, before a walk. It gets my blood pumping and it tastes like a melted popsicle. This is amazing. You will love it. If you've been looking for an afternoon pick-me-up besides caffeine, go over to joshtrend.com/Organifi and use the code WellnessForce, all caps, to get your red juice filled with these mushrooms and adaptogens that will truly change the pace of your day.
joshtrend.com/Organifi. Use the code WellnessForce to save 20% off.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. I appreciate you being here so much. You know, time is our most valuable resource. It's something we can never get back. And the fact that you spend your time, your breath, your presence, your mind, your heart, your body, your soul here with me on the podcast, I am so grateful. I want to give you a free gift. Head over to joshtrent.com/M21. This is where I've taken these 500 episodes and I've squeezed down to get just the juice, the most important nuggets. The things that'll move the needle for you in your life right now, maybe you're needing a wellness reset or a reboot. These are 6 science-backed practices that I promise you from my research and my application will help you go from A to B, the person you are now to the person that you desire to be, the one that is fulfilling their potential. joshtrent.com/M21. One of the practices in the M21 is breath work. This is a guide that in 21 minutes a day, you can take these 6 foundational wellness practices backed by science. And in 21 minutes a day, you can completely revolutionize the way that you feel in your body, the way that your mind speaks to you, and the way that your heart operates as a guidepost in the world. Now, back to breath work. If you've been wanting to use your breath to clear your stress, if you've been curious about how to use breath work in a practical way, I want to invite you to join us in the 3-week journey over at breathwork.io. This is the Breathe, Breath, and Wellness program where I can personally guide you one-on-one to get the fundamentals about the posture, the process, and the application of using breath that you're already doing just in the most beautiful way to clear your stress. Breathwork.io. Use the code Josh25. Josh25 gets you 25% off the entire 3-week journey. Come join me, breathwork.io. I'll see you there.